But it was a boyfriend three day, but it was like the Olive Eight.
Was no, it was in the Sheraton.
Oh, we had breakfast at the Olive Eight.
We had breakfast at the Olive Eight, guys. You want to hear about it?
Yeah.
I had French toast. It was not very good. All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is another special episode from PAX's Day 2.
Yep.
Recap. Again, just Scott and Matt here.
This is going to be episode, what, 213?
213.
Yeah, by our logic, so this is now...
Because somehow, sometimes we count the episodes and sometimes we don't.
I decided we're counting them this time. So this is Saturday.
All Scott, guys. I told you before, the numbers are all in.
So this is Saturday. This is day two of PAX.
Yep. We're only doing three days this trip.
3 days of PAX. Yeah, we're not quite to the Monday 4 day PAX schedule yet. So we this is a little kind of a different day. We did not spend a lot of time on the expo floor, especially on the fourth floor. Spent a lot of our time on the sixth floor, which if you've not been to PAX before, traditionally tends to be indie games and the larger developers and publishers down on the fourth floor. So
Correct.
You get to see a lot of really interesting stuff on the sixth floor, which is what we did today. But first,
we kicked it off by going to a non-floor area because by Scott's logic, and this is good logic, other podcasts.
Are you going to give away our secrets?
Let's give it away.
Oh,
just this one
gosh.
Secret.
Okay.
You can't actually get on the floor at 10 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday as media. Like, you don't get special passes into the expo floor.
Yeah, you're supposed to wait in line with everyone else.
So if you set a 10 a.m. appointment, you will literally never make it to that 10 a.m. appointment. It's basically impossible. So what we do is we set off-site appointments.
Yeah, we make
Saturday
appointments
mornings.
For things that are not found on the expo floor. So
it's
we
a brilliant move on Scott's part.
Thank you.
So we went to Gigantic, which is a podcast favorite here. We've gone for two PAXs now. All three of us played it at South for the first time ever, and we're pretty happy with it. And then Ash and I played a new build at East, where I think they had announced Xbox when we went and played East, but hadn't said much else. And then today we played, and it has been announced that they are an exclusive to Windows 10 and Xbox One.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. But I think the big thing we can talk about this time is we both got to play with the controller integration.
Yeah.
So not keyboard and
awesome.
Mouse.
Yeah. And I think, first of all, the game, and you know, we actually did speak with someone from the development team, Gigantic.
Yep.
We'll get to that interview in just a second. But something that is really great about the way that Gigantic was designed is that there are not a lot of controls like you would find in like a traditional MOBA game.
Right.
So
your move set is moderately limited.
Yeah, the moves and the abilities that are in the game are designed in such a way that it's actually maps to a controller really well, because you know, there's four main abilities and those map onto the bumpers, obviously, and then everything else kind of functions like a traditional first-person shooting game.
Kind of class... it's third-person.
A third-person shooting game.
Yeah.
And that even works for the melee characters as well, and I think it worked really well.
Yeah, I picked up my old favorite sniper that I played the first two times I played the game, and I just fell in sync with the controller. Like, it fit my playstyle, like, near perfectly. This game I've talked about in the past being a little too frenzied and a little too... Like, I get sort of overwhelmed and lost in the keyboard at times. So I'll forget that I have whole move sets. Like, I'll just not hit things. I'll not see my special being available and just never use it. And I'm just so comfortable with a controller that this worked really well. I ended up having an absolute blast playing. And it's while I looked forward to playing it before, now I'm like, okay, I'll actually pick this up on Xbox and play it.
Yeah, and I think since we traditionally tend to be console gamers, specifically on the Xbox, with this announcement that it's coming to, you know, Xbox and Windows 10, I think really makes it at least more accessible to me, and I think to you as well.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and something that we talked about in the interview as well is that there are a number of different characters in the game that really suit a number of different play styles. So if you come from a background where you play first person shooters, you know, you could be a sniper or, you know, some kind of assault class. if you're sort of more into brawlers and fighting games, there are, you know, a number of classes that work for that as well. So I think, you know, I played as a fighter this time,
yeah,
which obviously is really great on a controller because you can really focus on doing your quick hits and dodging and stuff like that.
And, yeah, and I played the sniper on the controller, and a lot of the guys there were saying, like, oh, you're doing the controller with the sniper. I think when people think of kind of shooters and snipers, the keyboard and the mouse have so much fidelity that they think you're going to be more comfortable on it. But yeah, I mean, we'll cut to the interview because I think that we're covering some ground that mm-hmm. we covered in the interview.
Absolutely.
And you can get kind of a better, more awake version of how Gigantic went from us there. So
sounds
let's
good.
Go to the past.
Hi, my name is Carter McBee. I'm a gameplay designer on Gigantic.
Cool. So it's Sunday morning, or what is, no, let's try that again. It's Saturday morning. Yeah, how about that? Late night, right? So like I said, we had a chance to play Gigantic previously, and the game has come a long way since then. And one of the things that has transpired since then is that the game is now coming to Xbox One and Windows 10, which is very exciting. So let's start with sort of like a high-level flyby of maybe like some of the things that have changed in the game since then, or, you know, improvements or gameplay features and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you already touched on the biggest one, which is the Windows 10 and Xbox One version of the game, which actually just went into beta, closed beta, yesterday on both Windows 10 and Xbox
One. That's exciting. That's awesome.
So, yeah, yesterday was the first time anyone outside the company has played it on the Xbox, and from what I've heard, it's going good so far. But, yeah, we have full support for a controller, so you can basically, whichever input device you want to play with, it works. It's the same game for both.
Yeah,
and so that's pretty exciting.
The game will be cross-platform as well?
Or? Yes, it will be. We're still working out the details of what exactly that means in terms of, you know, like there are some characters who play kind of equally with both the keyboard and mouse and the controller, whereas, you know, some characters play a little bit different, like the sniper character on a controller versus a keyboard and mouse. It's not maybe an even playing field, so we're still working out the details on, like, what we're... Basically, we want to provide a good experience for both sides without anyone feeling like they're getting cheated based on which input device they choose to play
with. Yeah, and I wanted to ask if there were, like, any challenges that you encountered in trying to sort of map the game to the controller, or at a basic level, did that come fairly easy, or...?
Yeah, so it, luckily, you know, even going back before we had any sort of partnership with Microsoft, we always thought the game would work really well on the controller. We didn't necessarily design it for one, but just because, you know, like, there's four base abilities, you know, they all would fit on the controller. We didn't have to modify anything, really.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We just had to, like, okay, this button goes here, this button goes here. It was actually fairly straightforward. You know, there was a lot of tuning that goes involved with, you know, making the sticks feel right and everything. But, you know, that type of stuff came along fairly smoothly as well. And we think it plays pretty well now.
Yeah, I thought it played awesome. I mean, personally, like you guys were talking about before we played the demo, you know, Gigantic is a game that is conducive to a lot of different play styles, a lot of different play backgrounds. So personally, I played as a melee character. And I thought that was, you know, perfect for the controller and worked really well. Matt, what did you play as?
I played as Imani, which is a sniper with the controller, and weirdly enough, like, that's sort of where I'm comfortable with snipers, so it felt really good on the controller.
Yep.
I never know if people think, because of the kind of fidelity of a keyboard and a mouse, sometimes snipers, they think that's, like, better on the keyboard and mouse, but for me, it's always been controller, and this like, I've slid right into it.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of it comes down to familiarity and how comfortable you are with it, because, you know, when we first put in support for controller, we had the whole studio playing on controller. And, you know, some people are just terrible because they've been playing with keyboard and mouse for so long.
Yeah.
You know, after we kind of went back to, like, okay, just kind of play on whatever you want, you know, some people stuck with the controller because that's just what they were more comfortable with. They actually did better with it.
Maybe you could actually see a scenario in which the controller you use just depends on the character that you play, right?
So yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have someone here, actually, who prefers to play the melee characters on the controller and the range characters on the mouse and keyboard. So
you could see it. Yeah, I definitely could see it going back and forth. For me, the controller felt less overwhelming, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're playing a fast-paced game and I'm trying to manage like which abilities I'm gonna click on yeah. with the keyboard, and like I'm not quick enough, and it's a little overwhelming. And the controller kind of just brought that in and felt a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, because you know, the controls are very kind of intuitive and simple. Like even mm-hmm. on the keyboard and mouse, there's not a ton of controls, but you know, there's a keyboard, there's all these buttons. You don't know exactly yeah. which is which. Yeah. But on a controller, yeah, everything is just right there.
Have you guys had a chance to check out the game with the Elite controller that's on the way?
I have actually. I have one at my desk.
Okay, cool. Because that's what I wanted to know about. Because I listened to a podcast where the engineer for the controller was interviewed, and he talked about all these different ways that, you know, if you like to play games as a sniper, you can like set up the controller in a specific way.
Yeah, so exactly.
How do you feel like you know, what's that experience like, and how do you feel like that's going to, you know, help maybe bring players that are, you know, more comfortable with PC controls over to, you know, console space with a, you know, Elite controller or something like that?
Yeah, the Elite controller, we had a early prototype of it and it was promising, but like once we got like the final version, it just feels really good.
I've heard nothing but good things about like
yeah,
holding that controller.
The weight and everything just is really good. Mm-hmm. I really like it. I haven't had a chance to do like the kind of fine tuning stuff with the sticks.
Yeah.
I've mostly just been kind of swapping out the different sticks that you can put on it and yeah. messing around with that. But it's really cool. I have a feeling that a lot of people who do end up buying that are gonna play really well in our game, because it does feel really good and it works really well. Depending on who you're playing, you know, it could probably help you out.
Cool. And then you know, something that's near and dear to my heart, since it's coming to Xbox and Windows, there's gonna be achievements, right, for the game?
There are gonna be achievements. Yeah? Yes.
Is that something that you've had internal discussions about like what those achievements should be like and what the nature?
Yeah, actually, we have a lot of them implemented on the back end already. So
awesome. That's really exciting.
So yeah, there will definitely be a full suite of achievements.
I think that's super cool. And then what is you know, what's the timeline looking like right now for the, you know, for the release of the game?
Yeah, so we're in closed beta, like I said, starting yesterday. So you can sign up on our website, gogigantic.com, to get into that. Aside from that, we're starting our open beta phase. We don't have a hard date for it yet, but, you know, end of this year, early next year. But, you know, in our closed beta phase, we'll be kind of ramping those numbers up as we go, and more and more people will have a chance to play it. And then, you know, once it gets to open beta, as you know, in a free-to-play game, open beta is essentially when the game is released, right? Because
yeah.
anyone can play it. So the release date will be, you know, sometime next year, whenever we want to flip that switch and say it's released.
Cool. And then sort of like as a final, like, overall question, when people finally sit down to play this game, when they get their hands on it, what is the experience that you would like for them to have? And what is the experience that has been crafted internally that you want the player to have when they finally get to sit down and play this game? Because I think it's a ton of fun and really exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, we want players to have fun. But, you know, the experience we want them to have is when the game is over, they want to play again.
yeah.
And I found that for myself, even after I've been playing it for a really long time, you know, after a game, win or lose, if it's a close game, like, I just want to play again. And that's
yeah.
kind of what we want players to experience, is that, like, that was fun, I want to do it again.
Yeah, I will say that, you know, we've now played a couple of times, you know, as a group here, and I think every match we've played in, win or lose, the matches have been close, and we've enjoyed each and every one of them, have wanted to play again.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I mean, that's been speaking on that really quick, one of the core philosophies of the design of the game is to make it so even if you lose, you had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, kind of like, we never want the games to kind of get out of control. We always want the games to feel like at any point, if you start playing better, you could turn it around, you could win. So that goes into a lot of our mechanics designs. You know, of course, there's a fine line between that and rubber banding Mario Kart style. But
of course, yeah.
But what we've tried to do is keep it with, like, the three wound system that we have. So, like, even if you're getting slaughtered, you're down two wounds to zero. Like, you could come back from that.
Yeah.
And it does happen all the time.
That's the tricky thing with a game like this, too, is that, like, you know, by its nature, there always will be a team that is going to lose.
Yep.
Right? So there needs to be some sort of enjoyment. You need to, like,
yeah.
build an experience in which losing is still enjoyable, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Just to wrap up, let our listeners know again where they can find you guys on social media and how they can go sign up for the game.
Yeah, so our Twitter is at GoGigantic. Our website is GoGigantic.com. You can go there and sign up for the beta for Windows 10 and Xbox One going on right now.
Cool. All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
All right.
It.
Thanks, guys.
So I hope you enjoyed our chat with the folks from Gigantic.
They're really excited about this game, which is kind of awesome. Like, the whole group is.
They have a really great community/dev team that that shows up to these events, and it's a really positive atmosphere, and they're really enthusiastic about the game, trying to get everybody get everyone involved in playing the game. And as you may have heard in the interview, I believe that their beta started on Xbox One.
Closed beta started yesterday.
So we might have some codes to give away in the near future.
How about this?
Okay.
If you hear this and you tweeted us something about Gigantic, like, I don't know, tag them in a tweet to us. Tweet at us and tag and hashtag Gigantic. And the first person to do that, we'll give a code to them.
Sounds good. So we'll do that. And then you can start playing Gigantic with us on.
Because we're all going to be playing.
Yeah, I believe the code that we have would be valid for both
Windows 10
and Xbox One.
Yep, either one. So if you want to play Gigantic, all you got to do is tweet at us, tag Gigantic in it, and we will give the first person who does it a code.
It's going to be funny because, you know, Ash actively monitors the Twitter more than we do, and he's going to start.
I do. He just doesn't know it.
Oh, well, he's going to get tweets and going to be like, "What is this all about?"
So next up, we left the Grand Hyatt, got some coffee, I believe, and headed up to see Ash on the big Sword Coast panel.
Oh, no, he was on Twitch first.
Oh, we went and saw him on Twitch, yeah. I posted a couple funny GIFs and videos from that. So we watched him on Twitch, which was humorous to watch, at least for us. It's weird for him, I know, and weird, moderately weird for us, but more just kind of fun to sit there and watch
our
friend.
It's just fun to see your friend on the other side of the equation. So then they had a really big... they had a really big panel over at the
Wyvern,
but it was a Wyvern Theater. But it was at the Olive 8.
It was in the Sheridan.
Oh, we had breakfast at the Olive 8.
We had breakfast at the Olive 8, guys. You want to hear about it?
Yeah,
I had French toast. It was not very good.
See, the thing about PAX Prime in Seattle is that all of the different locations are very spread out throughout downtown Seattle. So we have spent a lot of time just hopping in and out of different hotels for various reasons, including breakfast. And panels and other things.
Fun fact, Scott will not drink coffee at breakfast so that we can get Starbucks after breakfast.
Yeah, I do like my Starbucks. And you always take that gamble with the hotel breakfast coffee, and it's usually...
We're in Seattle, man. This is like a coffee town.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I guess sometimes I'm burned by like the $3 coffee that you get at the breakfast, and you're like, oh, no.
It'll never be as good as watching Ash put salt in his coffee.
Yeah, that's like almost like...
It was here, wasn't it? Was it Boston?
I think that may have been Boston because we had breakfast at that really swanky place.
Yeah, swanky breakfast spot.
Yeah.
So we watched Ash on Twitch. We posted a couple fun videos. I've actually got some more fun footage from that I might try to put up somewhere. And then we headed over to his panel at the Sheridan. It was a really cool panel. It's so funny because, you know, we keep saying it's a little weird to talk about, you know, Ash's game, even though he's community manager for it.
But it's the game that he is working on.
Yeah. You know? But again, like, I feel like we can, like you and I can, without him sitting here, because we're not, I have no affiliation to this game whatsoever.
Yes.
I'm a gigantic D&D fan, and Scott and I were talking about it when we walked out of this panel, because there's been many, and I've talked about it specifically on this podcast, I know for a fact, there's been many cons where I go to all the D&D panels and I watch the stuff that's going on, and I just come out and I go, man, they could do something so awesome digitally. Like, they could really, they have all the stuff, you know, like, it's them. They've got it. And
they need a digital platform to deliver some of this
stuff. Partnering with Nspace, like, this is really, it's really frigging awesome. Like, there's a single player campaign, which is great and cool, and you can play through that with and make your character. But for me, because I love DMing and I love telling stories, watching them go kind of in depth on what this DM tool is going to be is really killer. Like you can do so much stuff. You can customize it, or if you just want to like quick throw some stuff together to let somebody play through, let your friends play through it. Like, it really does feel like they thought about what a true tabletop and DM experience is supposed to be, and then they just went for that, you know. And it, what was really interesting on the panel was to hear a lot of people come up and ask questions about whether stuff would be in the game, which was most of what the questions were. And they were fair questions. They weren't like crappy ones. It was just like, hey, am I gonna be able to put my own map in the game, you know, like, yeah, can I do this or that?
A surprisingly good Q&A session at
it
panel.
Really was, yeah. And what I loved to hear was that, because I come from a background of software development, and the reality of launching software stuff is like, it's never what you want it to be on launch. Like, launch is usually just, what can we target at this date that we can actually like get out, mm-hmm. you know? So it was really interesting to hear them respond to some of those questions and talk about, you know, we've absolutely talked about that. That's on a list, or yes, that will be in launch, or no, it won't be in launch. Like, it was neat to hear them be realistic about what they could pull off at day one and what they feel like the long-term goal of this game is.
Yeah. The impression that I got, that I walked away from the panel with, was that the release of the game is not the end of the game. It's the beginning.
Yeah.
Right. And so
they really want it to be a platform.
Yeah. And more or less they kind of said, hey, we're going to keep working on this game as long as you want to keep playing it.
Right.
So a lot of the features that people were asking for were things that they had kind of already talked about internally, yeah, and said, well, you know, it's on our list and we just need to see how, you know, what the reception is for the game and what people want in the game.
They brought up a really interesting point of having the ability to sort of mix tabletop and, like, one of the guys asked a question about it, and the guy from Wizards of the Coast kind of responded and said, you know, I think it'd be really awesome if you're running a tabletop campaign and then you guys either you have to split up for whatever reason for a couple weeks or whatever it might be, and then you throw together a quick, you know, in-game like dungeon crawl that you can do, you know, based off of the story that you're already doing on your tabletop.
I think he was even saying you could play your game at the table.
Yeah.
And then just do your dungeon crawls in Sword Quest Legends.
In Sword Quest Legends, yeah.
Yeah, like, which is crazy.
That's pretty cool. So. Yeah.
And the other thing that I thought, I mean, the thing that I thought was really impressive about the way they explained the game to the fans at the panel was that you know, there are a number of different ways that you could enjoy this game when it comes out. You could just pick it up and play you could play the campaign solo.
Yeah.
And that by itself would be an awesome experience.
Right.
You could play the single player. I mean, you could play the campaign, but allow other people, you know, friends or potentially strangers to jump into your game,
yeah,
control the, you know, the other party members as you go through the game. You can spend a lot of time creating custom, custom campaigns and encounters and things like that. Share that stuff with the community. You could be a DM in real time.
Yeah.
You could be a player in a game that's being DM'd by someone else. So I feel like there are a lot of different ways that you can, be able to enjoy Sword Coast Legends.
Too cluttered. It doesn't, like, and that's why I was saying that when they were asking questions about what they were going to put in and they were saying, well, that's not going to be on release or whatever it might be, really made me realize that they really focused on what can we deliver that's a worthwhile experience from any angle, you know, and then we'll build from there. So I'm excited. I really am legitimately excited about this game. And Ash, you know, when we finally played it, this is our first time we've played it, you know, like, literally, there's no secrets here. We haven't seen the game up until yesterday.
Yeah, we've seen the same stuff that you've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, he was so excited to have us play it, you know, and it just was really cool to finally get our hands on it and get our eyes on it. And it really is pretty awesome. I think we could create some really fun stories. So
absolutely.
I'm excited.
Yep. So what did we do next?
Next, we headed out to the sixth floor. We went to Versus Evil.
Yep.
Who had a bunch of games for us to look at and a couple that I'm very excited to talk about. One of them is an expansion on a game that I played at PAX South called Guild of Dungeoneering. And this expansion is called Guild of Dungeoneering Pirate's Cove. And it's basically a pirate take on the original game. The original game is sort of unique version of dungeoneering, quote unquote, like being a DM.
Yeah.
Where essentially you get cards, and your cards will be monsters and map pieces. And then you have a character that's on a board that's not actually you, it's the player. And the player is AI. And you're trying to lead this player around the map for some sort of goal. The goal in this one was to swashbuckle with one of these other pirates. So you're putting down map pieces, and then you can drop like loot in different places. And then the AI decides what direction it's going to go and how it's going to do this. And you can either lure them with monsters or scare them with monsters, or you can drop loot and try to get them to move around this map to get to the ultimate goal. So I talked about it a bunch, I think, after the South episode. It's really fun. It's pretty engaging. This is the first time you got to play it, right? The only thing I will say about this demo was that it was crushingly hard. Like,
yeah,
we didn't make it to the end of this demo piece, and we played probably 6 or 7 times.
My guess is that they made the demo difficult intentionally in order to allow enough people to spend time playing the game, get enough people, you know, give enough people turns on the game, because I feel like with a game like that, you could really spend 20-30 minutes going through at least just the map that we got to see in the demo that they had here at PAX Prime.
Yeah.
But what I saw, I thought was really awesome in the sense that it was a, like you said, it was a unique take on a card game, first of all.
Yeah.
And a unique situation in which you play sort of as a GM, but it's not, you know, you're not controlling every single thing like you're doing in traditional D&D game. It's just kind of like the context for what you're doing.
There are like randomly placed monsters as well that you don't put down. So it's not like you're literally placing every piece. There's some of the map is already there, but you have to kind of like figure out how to guide them the best way through this map. And if you kill monsters, you'll get loot. And if you get loot, you can like upgrade your character while you're playing, or the character that's on the board, you get like give them armor and special abilities, and like that will help you get through the map.
Just has a really clever like sketchbook art style too, which
it feels like a kid in middle school like
drawing his you know, fantasy dungeon maps. Yeah, so that was a fun game. Yeah,
it was really fun. We're gonna go back to the next one that we literally played in order because I want to spend a minute on it.
The
third game we played is called Banner Saga 2.
Yeah.
So I think we talked a bunch about Banner Saga 1. It was kickstarted. It's a group out of Austin that built it.
Yeah, I think some of the folks were former BioWare folks.
They were former BioWare Austin guys who broke off and decided to make their own game and built this just beautiful strategy RPG that was all rotoscoped art, all set in this kind of Viking, very heavy Viking lore. And just really, really good, but very, very difficult.
Oh, it is super challenging.
It's very challenging, but
you need to have like a ton of patience to play.
Like permadeath and like everything in it is meant to be difficult. They also track your choices. So there's a dialogue tree that you walk through while you're playing, and your choices will affect like where the story goes and what the outcome is. So Banner Saga 2 picks up not too long after Banner Saga 1. I never actually beat Banner Saga 1 all the way, but there wasn't anything super spoilery at the beginning, at least, other than some of the characters
something
dying.
That happened, but they did say that your choices in the first game carry over.
Or you will kind of walk through a story and those choices will
like
then...
if you did not play the first game. But it seemed like they went with the formula, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah,
right? Because the game was so good already. Pretty much all they needed to do was just improve upon the things, you know, based on feedback from their community, which I feel like they did.
Combat was a little quicker. Combat was a little smoother because it is very slow and choppy.
Yeah, very turn heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not, it's still very turn heavy, but it was a little bit smoother, a little bit quicker. The clicking was a little more refined, like how you use the actual interface, because playing Banner Saga 1, one of the issues I usually had was it's sort of like a heavy-handed thing, and then when you're trying to understand what the different stuff means, there's a lot of rules to it. So there's like different ways your attack affects their armor and how you can attack and what character should attack different ways, and then you can, you know, weight your attack heavy or lower, and like there's just a lot of things to get through.
It's just a super tactical game, and I feel like if that's the kind of thing that you're into, you can really spend time sinking your teeth into the rules of the game and kind of learning all the ins and outs and the tactics for all the different types of characters and really go crazy with that. And I feel like that's what we saw in Banner Saga 2 was just a really refined, in-depth tactical RPG game.
Super amazing art still. They added more cinematics. So
which I think is something that they heard from the community.
That's what the guy was saying.
They just wanted more of what made the first one great, and I think that's what they're going to deliver in the second game.
And then the other thing we should mention really quick, we didn't really hear too much about it, but they are kickstarting a board game version of Banner Saga, and it's called War Banner, I believe. Banner Saga War Banner.
The thing that piqued my interest, of course, is that it's co-op against the game.
Yeah, it's 2 to 4 players against the board. Although he was saying that there can be some sort of infighting based on, like, the board will give you a quest, and then you have like certain ways you do that, and then the cards will affect you making it on your quests. But those cards could also affect you dealing with each other and figuring out like, well, you're supposed to survive, but this card's good for me, so maybe if I do this, it'd be bad for you. And you know, you have to kind of make those decisions. It looked cool. All the art was amazing. He showed us three different 3D models of like printed 3D yeah. models of what the characters will be, and they look as amazing as the animated stuff that is in the game.
Yeah, I think the intention that he alluded to was that they would, you know, they want to ship the 3D figures with the board game, but they want to give the player the opportunity to paint them, you know, yeah. so they're not going to be, they're not
gray,
gonna be,
like yeah. gray plastic. So
yeah, gray plastic.
Prime and paint kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they looked really awesome. So we left there, and we didn't leave there, but we walked the game we played in the middle that I think we both actually want to talk a bunch
about.
Like the
surprise game.
This yeah. is a game that when Scott said, oh, we'd love to come see Banner Saga 2, and they wrote back and said, cool, we have another game built on the Banner Saga engine. You might want to check it out.
Yeah.
And it's called Skyshine's Bedlam.
Yeah. So the way that the game has been explained to me from the people associated with the game is that they describe it as sort of a mashup between Mad Max and FTL.
Yeah.
So imagine FTL style gameplay in a sort of post-apocalyptic
Mad Max world. Yeah. You're not in space. You're on the ground. There's like six different races you can play as, which have different, not ships, but vehicles that you drive around in.
Yeah. So it sounds like the goal is to traverse this wasteland.
Yeah.
In order
the
to
map
get...
was gigantic.
Yeah. It's funny because you looked at the map and you saw, you know, maybe there was, you could probably very, you know, quickly mentally count the number of regions on the map.
Right.
And I was like, oh, so we just make like 10 hops and we're there.
No.
But each region had multiple, yeah. multiple
it
things
was insane.
To do inside of each region. And the part where Banner Saga comes into play is when you get into combat situations.
Yeah.
The game shifts into a view that looks very much like Banner Saga, but the combat is sort of stripped down because it's not the primary focus of the game.
Right, sort of XCOM-y Banner Saga-ish
Yeah,
combat.
So it's not, the rules are not as detailed as you would find in Banner Saga, but, you know, outside of the combat mechanic, there are a number of other things you need to do, such as managing your resources,
right.
just like you do in a game like FTL.
So yeah, it was like crude oil, battery power,
and meat.
Meat
and you need to collect the resources to keep your ship alive and the different resources do different things, and you can trade and collect.
And then your vehicle's actually carrying people. So the part that you're, what your actual mission is to get this group of people that are on your, there's like 1,000 people on your carrier vehicle, and you're trying to get them from the beginning of the map all the way to an end point on the map.
I tried to imagine like the Snowpiercer.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, so the art style was very Mad Max, but very cool. The gameplay was killer. Like, I mean, it's
got all that same stuff, you know. It's like, just like Banner Saga, it's got permadeath.
Yeah.
Your characters can, you know, if they survive enough combat, they become veterans and
they
become
level.
Like total badasses. You kill a couple of sort of boss type creatures in your encounters, and those large creatures joined our team. They
yeah.
came to our team, and they're very powerful.
Yeah, super powerful
allies. But they, you know, just
there's also a lot of tactics as far as like, if one of your guys gets injured and you keep them alive, when they go back on your vehicle, it will tell you how many days until they'll be ready to fight again. So you could put them back in a fight if you want to, but they'll be lower health and they'll probably die really fast. So if you've got like a veteran or one of the special heavy guys,
you have to let them heal.
You have to like let them heal and just fight without them whenever you go
yeah.
to different places. There was yeah. also a really neat mechanic where when you would land in a new spot on the map, it would give you choices to explore around the spot you landed. So, you know, as opposed to Out There or FTL, where once you get to a place, there's really only X amount of things to do here.
Plus, you have to, like, in those games, you have to move your entire vessel
yeah.
from place to place. And what you're describing is you kind of send out, like, a search party.
Yeah, so it still takes resources, but it's much less. And you go out and you'll discover either new characters to pick up or story points or fights that you can get into. We played for probably an honestly too long. We probably played for about 20 minutes.
20, 30 minutes, yeah.
And I was seriously loving the game. Like, I could not stop playing it while I was sitting there playing. Like, you had to basically go like, hey, we have to go play the other two games. We're not
yeah.
going to make it through this.
It's funny. I feel like every time we come to something like this, there are things that we sign up to do that we kind of know what we're getting into.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, for me so far, sort of this surprise game of PAX for me, just based on what I knew and what I didn't know going into the games that we've played so far.
I knew very little about any of the games that we were about to play, and this took me by complete shock. But it was seriously fun, super brutal. Like, you basically at the beginning of the game, because all of your guys are rookies, you just have to like ready yourself to just they're gonna die. You're gonna lose multiple characters before you start winning.
Yeah, I think there were 5 or 6 different classes of characters that you could choose, you know, who and what you took into combat. And I think the game, you know, the demo started us with maybe 5 or 6 of each type.
We probably had about 25.
Yeah. And I think by the time you finally stabilized your crew in terms of getting the combat on track, we probably lost more than half of our original.
Oh, for sure.
More than half of our original crew.
I had like 2 of my snipers left, like one of my shotgun guys, or no, one of my close range guys. Yeah, there was like a tank class that I basically almost wiped my.
And you lost all of like your close range combat shotgun guys, I think.
Yeah, so
it was a crazy game.
It was very hard, but really, really, really fun, and the style was really cool, and the story was pretty neat too. I mean, the little bit of story that you're getting in between it. It was odd because we kept throwing everybody there said FTL and I immediately said Out There because there's all these cutaway text scenes and there's all these like
choices you can make
and like everything was story wise more Out There, and then like travel stuff and resource management I could see being a little closer to FTL, and then the fighting was very Banner Saga. And then the look and feel was Mad Max, and I think part of it that I loved was just that there was none of the pixel art or space fatigue that I feel when I walk around PAX, because, you know, we joke or talk about it a lot. A lot of the games start to blend at PAX. Like, there's a lot of stuff that a lot of people do, and not to say that they're not brilliant or well done or anything that it might be. It's just at a certain point you're like, okay,
it's nice to see how many have I seen this stuff? Refreshing style presentations.
Yeah, and this was really just felt different. Like, it felt like while we're referencing other games, it didn't look or seem like any of them in particular. It just kind of came off of the genre. So I was really surprised.
Sky Shines Bedlam.
Keep an eye out for that one. It's not out yet. I don't think
that it is.
But I'm sure it'll be beta or something along those lines.
It feels like it would be ready soon just based on what we played.
So I'm sure we'll talk more about it. But after that, Scott dragged me to a game that I will be dead honest. I, by title alone, was like, I don't think I'm going to want to play this. Why is Scott making me come over here? And then we walked up and I didn't know Scott had already played this game significantly. And he just like looked at me and was like, he's going to play, and like pointed at me. And I was like, why am I playing this game? I don't know or care anything about it. And it's called Adventures of Pip.
Yeah. So Adventures of Pip is a game that I think has actually been out in some form since June or July.
Yeah.
Because I think it started as a PC release. And
to be fair, that was like the worst point of my year. Which is why I don't think I knew anything about it. I wasn't turning my TV on at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then the game, I think, very quickly came out on Wii U after that. And then just recently was released on Xbox One and PS4. So, Adventures of Pip is a 2D side-scrolling platforming style game. But, you know, we have an interview with a couple of the developers. And what I mentioned to them is that the game, you know, when you look at it, they're clearly paying some sort of tribute to the classic 2D side-scrolling Mario platforming games. But I really feel like they've done something unique in the game where they implemented a game mechanic in which your character starts out as a single pixel and then
to be clear, because I think we don't actually express this message at all.
Yeah.
Single pixel means a square block.
Like
it's not literally a pixel on your TV that you have to find. It's like a rather large red square block that you're playing as.
Yeah,
think old Atari,
like a
not even Atari,
block.
Like before Atari.
Like a pong, like a pong block, right?
Correct.
So you start out as this block, and then very quickly you gain the ability to evolve into sort of an 8-bit version of yourself and then a 16-bit version of yourself.
Right.
And it's not, you know, and they explain this as well, that it's not, the goal is not to stay in the 16-bit version as long as possible, but you learn that all three versions of your character have different abilities, and you use these abilities to get through the different levels and solve the challenges and puzzles and find all the goodies that there are to find
in the
levels.
And I should clarify after what it sounded like shitting on the game beginning of this sentence, but I did sit down, I played the demo. It is extremely fun, like a crazy amount of fun, way more than I expected to have. And the mechanic is not like I expected when I heard Evolution game, because it's not like you're just constantly fighting this uphill battle to become the best version of yourself. The evolution and de-evolution of your character is literally part of the puzzle mechanic that you're, yeah, that you're moving around this game. And it's not puzzle. They might become heavy puzzles later on in the game, but the puzzles for the demo were pretty light.
I wouldn't describe the game as a puzzle platformer.
Yeah.
I would describe it as a game that is a platformer that you need to think creatively in order to figure out how to get through the levels and collect, you know, there's citizens that you need to save in each
right.
level, and figuring out how to get to those citizens is sort of what the puzzle is, because you're trying to figure out how you need to manage the evolutions of your characters and the various abilities that each version of your character has in order to get through those goals.
And then we talk about the demo, not at length, but a little bit in the interview, because we play a lot of demos at these things, and we play a lot of games, and we play a lot of indie games. And sometimes I don't think indie games have the time or wherewithal to put together literally a demo build. You know, I mean, they're putting
yeah.
together demo builds, but I don't know that they're thinking like, okay, I'm going to want to get 1,000 people to play this game for 10 minutes. How do I do that? Like, well,
mm-hmm.
and this was honestly one of the most well executed demos I've ever played in my life.
Yeah,
like, it had a piece of everything. You evolved your character all the way up, but then it gave you puzzles where you had to devolve, you know, to like get through the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also had this really, the part that I did probably the best at and really enjoyed, this sort of like Metroid or Sonic-esque run at the end where the level's starting to fight against you.
It's like a roller coaster run.
Yeah, yeah. You're just yeah. trying to get through this piece of the level while it's all coming down around you. And it was fun and challenging, and like it was what you want like a platforming game to be.
Pretty much in the span of 5 to 10 minutes, they introduced you to pretty much everything you would need to know
yeah.
about the game to decide whether or not it was something that you...
They introduced you to the story. They introduced you to saving the citizens,
the
to the evolution
yeah.
and de-evolution. Like, it honestly was, and I said it to them in the interview, it was one of the best executed demos I've ever played.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead at this point and jump into the interview?
It's a decent-sized one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a couple minutes longer than our other ones, so...
Scott's taking... Scott's mad because I was giving him looks while we were doing this.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of time to play, you know, unlike a lot of our other appointments. I had a lot of time to actually check out this game before we went into the interview, so I was pretty excited. So let's listen to our interview with the developers of Adventures of Pip, and then we'll be right back.
Yeah. My name is Mark Gomez. I'm the creative director on Pip.
And I'm Garth Smith. I was the lead programmer on Pip.
Excellent. So for our listeners, why don't you start by giving us an overview of the game?
So the idea behind the game is that you start off as a single pixel in this world of high-res people. And this evil queen comes in, and she steals the princess, and it's up to you to save her because everybody else becomes scared because the queen de-reses everyone in the town. So when you get the ability to evolve, you're the only one who understands that it's important that every evolution has its own importance.
Mm-hmm.
So you start off as a single pixel, you defeat enemies, you become a higher resolution, and you get more abilities, but you still want to de-evolve when needed because there's certain things that only a single pixel can do.
Mm-hmm, right, so it's like a 2D platforming game that has this evolution mechanic, but I think you touched on something that I wanted to talk about as well, is like there is sort of like this interesting narrative undercurrent of like there's almost like a class system of people of lower resolutions are like not as important as like, you know, the king and queen are like very, very like the royalty is very like high
hoity
res.
Toity.
Yeah. You know, high res individuals. And so all the people of great importance are high res. But
yeah.
as you said, the character, you know, goes through all three evolutions and all three are important. So,
yeah, it ties into the gameplay. It ties into the moral behind the game, and the player learns that, you know, through playing the game, it's not something that has to be told to them. They realize that as you play, you know, it's important for me to de-res. It's not like Mario where I just want to be the biggest Mario at all times.
Yeah.
You want to de-res. You want to see that every part of it is important.
Yeah, so since you mentioned Mario, something that I really like about this game from what I played is that the game definitely, we talked about this before, I feel like the game definitely pays tribute to those classic, you know, platforming games, but it's able to sort of stand on its own, like with some very fresh gameplay ideas and mechanics. For you guys, how did the classic titles sort of influence this? And then how did you go about sort of like taking that in a fresh direction you know, away from like Mario and stuff like that?
So, I mean, we all grew up growing, playing Nintendo games, Super Nintendo games, so we have a lot of nostalgia for those characters. So we really kind of wanted to hit that nostalgia, and because we love the old Nintendo games and that type of gameplay. So as we were going through, we wanted to have like an 8-bit version, 16-bit, really, you know, like all that art, we love it and everything. And so we were trying to figure out how to do this, you know, and it came up with, well, let's have, you know, a pixel, an 8-bit version, and a 16-bit version. And as they grow and as you devolve, because you can go down too, they have different abilities. They have things that, you know, that they do better on different versions. Mm-hmm. So it really came from, you know, we really, really love the old games, and we wanted to...
A lot of research.
Yeah.
A lot of research, yes.
Yeah. So, I was going to say, even stylistically, you can tell that as far as, like, even the way the characters animate, like, the 16-bit character has, like, more points of animation, like, in his movement, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot smoother, whereas, like, the 8-bit... I mean, it's still smooth, but we kind of animate it, so it really gives a throwback to the Nintendo era.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mentioned even, with the 8-bit character, has, like, a punch mechanic. It kind of reminded me of Alex Kidd, yeah. Miracle World from the Sega days. It's really cool.
Yes.
Something that you didn't see that I know is in the game from the full version. There's also an upgrade system, too, right? Like, there's a town that you can go to with shops and stuff like that as well, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the elements in the game is, when the queen comes and destroys the village, that all these villagers have run away, and you can go and rescue them. One of the first ones that you rescue is a shopkeeper, for example, which unlocks the shop at that point, and then you can go purchase some potions. There's some items and stuff.
It's what's nice is that the people that you save in the town will reappear in the village, and they'll have more information for you. There's shops that open up, and so, you know, a lot of things are growing from, you know, you going out into the world.
Absolutely.
One of the things with the evolution mechanic that I liked was that it's not, you can't go both directions essentially with the push of a button. So you devolve, which is its own mechanic that also does certain things, like you can break, I saw we were breaking special blocks with it, things like that. But then to evolve, you have to, at least in the demo, I had to bounce on a special type of enemy or hit a special kind of enemy. What that added to for me was a neat edge to the puzzle mechanic, so it wasn't just straight like, okay, now I hit B and then I hit the right trigger at the special time. Was that entirely intentional? Did you toy with other methods of doing this?
We toyed with all different methods. So at first, that's something that took a lot of time during development, was we know what kind of game we want to make. Now, how do we make it? Where are the holes in this kind of design? Because a lot of people have come up to us and are like, dude, I had a game idea just like that. Everybody had this kind of game idea, but no one executes it because there are lots of ways that this can go wrong. Before, we had 7 different evolution forms that the character goes through, but then we realized people just can't do it. You know, people don't know what each one does. We had it where when you get hit, you lose pixels because that's what makes the most sense.
Right.
But in the end, makes people commit suicide all the time. It didn't make any sense either.
Right.
So, you know, there was a lot of things we played with, and we even tried out the Evo Devo on the fly. What that did, though, like you said, it's like lock and key mechanic. Here's the lock, here's my key, activate it. Here's another lock, here's my key, activate it. Yeah. It made for a lot of quick Evo Devo puzzling, but it lacked a little bit of that, you know, I'm going to jump and it's like a roller coaster ride. I don't know where I'm going next. I hit this enemy and then something else happens. So there's a little bit of, it's almost like parkour when you have a little bit less in your control and more control in the environment.
So how much, I mean, to that point, like how much tuning have you guys had to go through and like tuning all those levels to make sure that you don't get the player into a position where basically they can't do anything because maybe they devolved and they got to a place where they're like, oh, can't, you know, I'm stuck now, like, and level's broken or something like that.
Oh, so, my gosh. We spent a lot of time tuning. I mean, it's funny you mentioned, like, the Evo Devo thing. I think we spent probably, like, 2 weeks going down that path before we were like, no, we don't want to do this. A lot of it is we had to make sure if – because the player can devolve and get rid of their pixels anytime they want, but they can't absorb pixels anytime they want. So we need to make sure the player couldn't get stuck anywhere. Right. So there's a lot of play testing for that.
Absolutely.
And I'm trying to think.
I've played through, you know, about a world and a half at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've encountered levels in which, you know, there was a path that I could no longer go down, but I never reached a point where I felt like, okay, now there's nothing I can do, and I just have to, like, die or quit out and, you know, restart or whatever,
A lot of that actually came from the camera. Surprisingly, we spent probably, like, a 2 days, maybe just tweaking the camera. And a lot of the level design, even if you look back at the original Mario, they have very specific, like, if we have a puzzle in the game where you need to advance and evolve or devolve, you know, attack a certain enemy, it has to all be in one screen. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
So you can see the puzzle. Like, when we first did this, we had huge rooms where you would have to, like, explore the room before you even knew what to do, and it really slowed down the gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
So we really had to learn how to streamline it, really compress the puzzles down to make them fun, and so you can see it and figure it out without getting frustrated.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think the other thing to mention on the level design is that it's not necessarily, like, a linear platform either, because there are, you know, secondary objectives. There are people to rescue in every single level, right? So it's not just, you're not just trying to get from start to finish and then hit the goal and then that's it. There's a lot of different ways you can approach, you know, the levels in the game, right? Yeah.
This was really painful for the level designers to wrap their head around. And like you said, making sure that someone doesn't devolve and get stuck in an area, that's something that we have to play through. It's like, okay, I got stuck here. Okay, let me fix it. Okay, I got stuck here. Okay, let me fix it.
Yeah.
And there's so many of those things, instances. But you also want to do it in a way that's smart, where it doesn't look like I've got a guy in every spot that you'll get stuck in, and it's just a Band-Aid. You don't want things to look like Band-Aids on broken houses.
Right, because backtracking isn't necessarily the worst thing if you've got to go back to start a puzzle over.
Yeah.
You want to make sure you're not saving them at every corner, and, like, yeah, that makes
so
sense.
So it was a lot of work just trying to get a lot of these puzzles refined and working correctly.
One thing I did want to applaud you guys on, because this is, we play a lot of games on the con floor and see a lot of indies and a lot of different titles. This is a really great demo. Like, it was actually really fun. It was contained. It made sense. Like, I got to see, I felt like I saw a lot of the game, even in a, what, 5-10 minute play session. So I wanted to say thank you.
thank you. Yeah, we definitely spent time on that demo to make sure that we could get the full experience of the game down.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a, you know, when you say Evo Devo, a lot of times people, you know, they come up with, like, Evo Land or
yeah,
something like that. So it's like with this demo, you can really see the evolution and the de-evolution. It's like you have to go up and down. It's more of a puzzle mechanic.
Right.
It's a lot less, you know, like Evo Land, it's a lot less like that, where it's just a nostalgic run through different types of genres. But this is more of, it ties into resolutions and the storyline.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a challenge to try and make it work, especially for a game demo where in 5 minutes we want to get people introduced to three different
right,
types of characters.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was that kind of thing where last year when we did the demo, we had people play it on day one. Then that night, Garth and the team were, like, trying to figure out, okay, let's fix this program, fix that thing. And then they sent back another build. We had a different build each day.
Wow. That's crazy. So about how long in general the game... Like, about how much gameplay do you think people get out of this? Is it how many levels or?
There's around 8 levels per world, around 5 worlds.
I think we have there's 46 levels total.
Awesome.
Yeah. If I remember right.
Levels are pretty hardy, so you know, I think it takes people roughly 5-10 hours to go through the game.
And the later levels, the difficulty definitely does ramp up quite a bit for the later levels.
That's awesome! I can't wait. Like, you mentioned the roller coaster mechanic earlier, and there are some levels where you're just kind of, like, flying by the seat of your pants, and you're like, "Well, I'm going to trust in this process and know that, like, I'm going to hit something where I'm going to need to, like, devolve, like, in midair and then kind of float my way into trouble,
yeah,
you know, out of trouble, stuff
there's
like that.
There's times where it's like, I'll just do this blind faith jump. It's like, oh, there better be something there. And there's something there. Okay, I guess it wants me to float. I better just float here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love stuff like that. Something else I want to talk about before we break is that you probably didn't get to hear a lot of it, but the music in the game is really spectacular.
Gosh,
there's, like, a really epic quality to the music. It's not... It's not maybe what I expected to hear, like, when I just saw the screenshots, but then I started playing and I was like, this really gets me charged up, you know? So, like, what went into the decision to, like, select the music that you did? And, you know, obviously you seem very happy with it, yeah.
We got to thank Jake Kaufman. Vert. Mm-hmm. He also did the music for, like, Shovel Knight, for example,
yeah,
and
yeah,
some other. He is absolutely amazing. I mean, we showed him the game. We gave him, you know, some ideas of what we wanted, and he just ran with it. And I gotta say, when we got the music drop from him, I was blown away. I was like, it inspired me. I was like, I want to make a game that's as good as this music.
I think
you know?
I think you did. I think you're selling yourself short. I think you did. The music sort of has a quality of, like, a old school, like, Japanese RPG. It's, like, very epic sounding, you know.
Yeah, I guess the idea behind it when we talked to Jake was because, you know, Jake is amazing at retro game music, like,
yeah,
you could see in Shovel Knight. But what we told him is, the game that we're making isn't about just being retro. It's not pixels for retro's sake. It's
you could have very easily been like, oh, it's going to be like chiptunes or something. Yeah. Or like 8-bit music or whatever.
But we told him, you know, this is our storyline. We want it to be something that ties into the story, something that's epic, and it doesn't have to be, you know, retro-inspired. There will be some chiptune pieces in there, but it's blended in with the full orchestra.
Yeah, if you pay attention to most of the songs, you'll hear hints of chiptune or hints of, you know, throwbacks to the 8 or 16-bit, even though it's a full orchestra, but there's definitely some hints of it in there.
It's very comprehensive, and I think that really adds a lot of, like, it like brings more of the world to life, I think, through their music. So something else I want to talk about very quickly is because, you know, your game has been available for a while, but only recently it's been came to Xbox One, which is how I actually discovered your game. Can you talk a little bit about the, you know, the decision to bring it to other platforms and going through that process of like bringing the game to like a new audience?
So we've never done console release before. This is actually our first console release. And I mean, it started back, we had a first Kickstarter that failed, right? And then we ran a second Kickstarter actually during PAX last year.
Mm-hmm.
That one passed, and we hit quite a bit of our stretch goals. And the stretch goals were Xbox One, Wii U, or actually we had Wii U from the start.
Right, right.
Xbox One and PlayStation 4. And the community really responded. We hit our stretch goals, and then we were like, okay, well, I guess we have to do this now.
You have to do this.
So,
I mean, there's this whole ID program that Xbox has. Well, I mean, because we're primarily, you know, Xbox gamers. So that process, I'm assuming, was...
Well, we got in contact with Microsoft. They sent us a dev kit. We had some contacts there that were really helpful. But it was definitely a learning experience getting onto the Xbox.
Now you're part of the summer series that they do, like the, you know, independent developer games that they do their summer series on. So that must be very exciting as well. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, at E3 I went to the ID at Xbox after party, and they gave out these boxes full of all of the other indies in that program. This box was huge, but you could see how well they really support their indies.
That's cool. I think there were like 25, 30 games released this summer, and this was one of the ones I played. It's really spectacular. Why don't you just let people know where they can find your game and where they can find you on social media?
You know, you can find us in the Xbox Store, PlayStation Store, Wii Store, Steam Store.
Yeah.
Go to TikTokGames.com for more information on the game. What's the Twitter? TikTok Games?
At TikTok Games.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, guys. The game is fantastic, and wish you all the best at PAX.
Thank you for stopping by and playing the game. We really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks. All right, cool. So Adventures of Pip obviously is available now on all the major platforms. I genuinely enjoyed it.
All of them.
Crazy. So I would encourage everyone to...
It's a small team, too. I'm amazed they released on that many platforms.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much my whole impression of the game is that my expectations were exceeded in just about every facet.
Sure. I could see that. Like
from what I've seen.
It just was a really fun game. It's nice to hear them talk about sort of story and the fact that they weren't just building a mechanic game. Like this really was, you know, they thought of what a cool story it would be if all the citizens were being like derezzed and there was a whole class system based around how high res you were. And like it was like almost Tron-esque in that way. You know?
Yeah, there's a great context for the game that I would encourage everyone to at least get their hands on it and see what it's all about.
And you were saying in the interview, the music, which I didn't get to hear,
is
great.
Super epic in the game. It reminds me of like a classic Japanese RPG, like 16-bit RPG game. It's so good. Full orchestra too, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So check it out, Adventures of Pip.
What do we do next?
We only did one more thing today. I know it doesn't seem like we did that much, but we did. It took all day.
Still a long day.
And that was, we went to our good buddies, Mylan and Ash. They did a panel called Origin Stories.
Yeah, so the purpose of the Origin Stories panel is to sort of just get together and tell your crazy stories about how all the various panel members got into the game industry.
Yeah, I'm going to forget everybody who was
on
the panel
okay,
probably.
So Ash was the moderator of the panel. We had our pal, Sean Baptiste from...
who we're going to talk to tomorrow.
We're going to talk to him tomorrow at Adult Swim Games. I'm very excited about that. We had a friend of the podcast, Jessa Brzezinski from Harmonix, on the panel as well. Voice actress Laura Bailey was on the panel.
Tim... I can't remember his last name.
But he's from Tin Man Games.
From Tin Man Games, which we've talked about at length because of
Mylan
Fitzwater Barrows.
MFB.
Who was also on the panel to talk about how she got into games, which was actually related to Tim, and it was really kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was a really cool panel, and it's interesting because I was really surprised at how everybody's story was slightly different.
Except they all went to theater school.
Yeah, except they were all somehow involved in theater in one way or another.
Who tried to sneak in that he went to one class in seventh grade, and that was somehow related.
But I thought it was really fascinating just to hear about how the different panelists emphasized different parts of their journey.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I was actually surprised to hear that everyone got in a slightly different way. I thought it was going to be sort of the same story, and it wasn't.
I keep saying this, I feel like, to this episode. We've done a lot of these panels, too, where we go to, like, you know, how to break into games or that kind of thing. And you commented on how this really was as advertised. This was like, hey, we're going to talk about our stories. And Ash put it really well, which you will probably hear at some point because we did record this
panel. Yeah, we did record the panel. Maybe we'll put it out soon.
Ash put it really well at the very, very beginning, which was, this isn't a panel necessarily with like strict steps on how to get into the gaming industry. This is our stories that will hopefully inspire you to continue after that journey if that's what you want. And what I always take away from these panels and what I always like to think about is that, like, it doesn't have to be gaming. You can relate these stories to just about anything. Like the fact that we live in an era where video games have cons built literally around them, you know, nerd culture has cons built around them. So you go to these panels that are like how to break into the movie industry or how to break into acting or how to break into, you know, video game industry. The reality is like, if you love, you know, veterinary school, like, or being a vet, like, that you can break into that too. Like, and it usually follows the same path, which is you just got to do it. You got to keep going after it.
Start doing it.
You know, learn all you can learn, study. And I think Laura Bailey answered a question at one point about voice acting and getting into it. And she put it best, which was like, hey, you already started, you went to school for theater. Now you just need to continue that path of education and learning. And, like, you know, there's a lot more to it than just falling ass backwards into something. Like, it might seem like that when you look around at everybody, but the reality is a lot of us are older now, and a lot of us have been doing a lot of grunt work for a long time, and breaking into any industry is not impossible. You just need to, you know, follow your heart and do what you got to do.
Work hard, be persistent, don't take no for an answer. Be nice, meet people.
Yeah,
stuff
be
like
nice.
That. Yeah,
good Lord.
So maybe we'll bring that full panel to you in a future episode, but I think it was a really enjoyable panel, and I'm happy that we were able to go.
It really was. And then we closed it out. We saw an old friend that was our bassist in our band.
Not podcast relevant, but
nope.
You know, we had
But
a nice...
it is, because Ash says that we bring up our band all the time.
Oh, yeah. So we were in a band, and we hung out with our bass player. So
yeah, he's a good guy, and he lives here now.
Yep. So I think that's it for this episode. That was 213, which is PAX Prime 2015, Saturday, day two.
Yep.
As always, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate, Facebook /NerdAppropriate. We are doing Instagram. We're very active on Instagram during conventions.
We would be right now, except that I'm going to out this. The LTE that we're on right now, the internet at PAX, is effing terrible.
It's like air quotes LTE, right?
So, oh my God. Like, I can't get text messages through it right now.
Yeah, it's hard to get any kind of reception inside of the convention center. But to the extent possible, we've been trying to take photos, and we're trying to get them out to the Instagram to share them with everyone.
If you actually see us tweet, like, during the day at the con,
it's just a miracle.
Thank the Lord that we somehow snuck that bandwidth out of our phone. Yeah. I don't know how it works, because we are not getting anything right now.
Some kind of miracle. But we're doing the best we can. We hope you're enjoying it, and we will probably get you another update for Sunday. So
yeah, and remember, tweet at us something about Gigantic, tag them in it, let them know that you listened, and we'll send you
first person.
We don't have a lot of codes.
Yeah,
we have one that we're sure about.
Yeah.
So we're gonna send that code out to the first person who tweets about it. So do that, and make it funny, because I like laughing.
Yep, there you go. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.
See ya.
Check, 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 check.
Does the mic smell? No, it's okay.
Sometimes the mic smells.
Yeah, I know. I was making sure. What's going on there?